When it comes to Europe, Amazon is by far the largest marketplace across most Western European countries. So eBay is a strong competitor. So eBay is very strong in the UK relative to Amazon, but Amazon's bigger. Other European countries, they're smaller by comparison. So they tend to be like a number two, number three, or number four.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm, Elevate IQ. If you are ready to expand your e-commerce footprint, you have several choices. For example, suppose you have been selling to the most popular channels, such as Amazon in North America. In that case, you might want to explore other channels, such as Walmart, Alibaba, or Etsy. Or you might want to explore some of the international markets, such as the UK, India, or Brazil. But the decision is not as simple as that, as you need to compare the channels in each country, understand their regulatory nuances, and cultural synergies to be successful in each marketplace and market. In today's episode, we have our guest, Paul Sonneveldt, who discusses the marketplace expansion strategy for e-commerce sellers or manufacturers aspiring to expand their footprint through digital commerce. He also describes visibility into the marketplaces around the world and their nuances. Finally, he discusses the unique requirements of each country and the resources available to them through the marketplaces, ecosystem, and service providers. Let me introduce Paul to you. Paul is the co-founder and managing director of Merchant Spring. Paul started his career as a management consultant and spent many years leading large retail and e-commerce businesses in Australia. He lives in Melbourne, Australia, with his wife and two children. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Of course, our pleasure. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and your current focus, Paul?
Yeah, sure. I'm assuming you're talking about the 30-second version as opposed to the two-hour version. So let me try and give you the 30-second version.
Let's try the 30-second first.
Yeah, and we can do the rest of this. So just in case your listeners are wondering, I'm actually Dutch, but I live in Australia, hence the strange accent. So I thought I'd get that out of the way. Other than that, I am the co-founder of a startup business called Merchant Spring. We're about 4 years old. We're originally based out of Australia, but now sort of spread out globally. And our main offering is a marketplace analytics and management platform specifically for sophisticated marketplace sellers, marketplace agencies, and marketplace investors. So yeah, that's what we do. We serve clients globally across, I think I did a count last week, about 24 different countries, most of those in North America, a lot of them in Europe, and sort of the remaining 20% sort of spread out everywhere else. So yeah, that's a bit about us.
Okay, amazing. So obviously we want to dig deeper into your marketplace knowledge as well as the international expansion, which is where your expertise is. But before we do that, we have one of the standard questions that we ask every single guest. And Paul, that is going to be your perspective on business growth.
The way, this is why it sort of answers the question, why did I, leave a kind of a corporate career 4 years ago and jumped into the world of e-commerce and marketplaces? For me, the logic around growth is quite straightforward. It's sort of a linear logic, which is, if you look at e-commerce, of course, e-commerce is growing, double digits in most countries. And, COVID has only accelerated that. Now, everyone knows that, but actually, if you are a brand owner or a manufacturer and you're looking at all your other sales channels, there's not many other sales channels available to you that are actually driving that sort of growth. And certainly when we talk to our clients, you know, they're not getting a lot of growth out of traditional retail channels or, you know, other channels. So e-commerce is one of the main sources of growth. That's kind of the point one I wanted to make. The second point is, if you think about e-commerce as an engine and you lift up the bonnet, so to speak, and you look at, okay, which of the cylinders are really, really firing here, you'll find that in most countries, it's marketplaces, right? E-commerce marketplaces. So, you know, e-commerce marketplaces, say in the US, of course, Amazon is a big one, but in most countries, e-commerce marketplaces already take about two-thirds of all the e-commerce transactions that are going on, and they're growing, right? So if you are a manufacturer or a brand owner, so yes, you can drive your own, you know, you can build your own website and do that, and that's a good thing to do, but actually, you know, the share of the market there is slowly shrinking, so you're swimming against a bit of a current. Still worth doing, costs a lot of money, driving traffic and the like, but you know, why not also tap into that current that is flowing in the right direction, which is marketplaces? You know, and there's more and more marketplaces popping up every single day. You know, we all have, you know, of the big ones, like the likes of Amazon, Walmart, yeah, Lazada, all of that. And I can talk more if listeners are interested. But there's new marketplaces literally being announced, you know, every single week. You know, so just in the last year, you've seen, you know, Kroger in the US say they're going to launch a marketplace. You've got Decathlon in France saying that they're launching a marketplace. Even here in Australia, our largest retailer, Woolworths, is launching a marketplace. And it just means that as a seller, brand owner, manufacturer, you're getting more and more options to get your product in front of customers. You know, and I see that certainly within the space of e-commerce as one of the most significant growth opportunities available to brand owners and manufacturers at this point in time.
Yeah, could not agree more. The more channels you have, the better, especially for the newer entrepreneurs. Let's say if they are trying to establish their brand in the market, and let's say if they don't necessarily have as much traffic on their website, then obviously the marketplaces are going to provide the proven platform to be able to bring the predictable revenue, is how I like to define. So definitely marketplace, the more marketplaces you can tap into, the merrier it is going to be for the manufacturers and distributors. So now let's talk about some of the nuances of these marketplaces. So I don't know, number one, obviously you touched a little bit on what these marketplaces are, but let's say inside those marketplaces as well, I think they have different fulfillment processes, they have different business models inside the marketplace as well. For example, let's say if we talk about Amazon. So Amazon has three or four different type of business models inside their marketplace. That similarly, I don't know if other marketplaces are going to have that as well. Can you talk about the major marketplaces that we have in the market and their business models?
Yeah, sure. So let me, because obviously this is a complex question, but the best way to tackle it is to maybe start with a certain geography. So let's say I am a manufacturer or brand owner based in North America, right? So probably 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I would have launched on Amazon, and Amazon would have been, you know, one of the only channels I would have been selling on. You know, largely because Amazon's so large, and I would have been able to get really good volumes of Amazon, and probably still can, you know. And in terms of Amazon, I've had the option of, you know, dealing with them on a wholesale basis through what we call typically 1P. So in other words, you know, Amazon acts like the retailer, you act as the wholesaler, and they just place purchase orders for your products. Or I could have chosen down, you know, going down the marketplace route, which is, you know, as a vendor, I am acting as the seller. So I decide what products I'm going to sell, what price I'm going to sell my products for, what the ranges I'm going to sell. But, you know, I'm also responsible for doing all the advertising, all of the content, all of the support. So they're really kind of, you know, two different models there. Now, what's happened over the last 15 years is, you know, even though we hear a lot about Amazon competing with private label and, you know, we've got to be careful, the reality is that, you know, almost 60% of the whole volume that's now sold on Amazon from a consumer point of view is sold through the marketplace. So Amazon is really driving the growth of its marketplace, and a lot of sellers are now benefiting from that. In fact, you know, a lot of people still jumping on board actually with Amazon. There's about 2,000 new sellers joining Amazon every single day. You know, and certainly from what we can see in our own clients' data, you know, if you have a well-run store, it is a sizable business. You know, it more than feeds your family. Let's put it that way. You know, it's not uncommon. You know, I was looking at a client this morning. We've got four products, right? And they'll be doing $500,000 in sales a month. You know, that is a really good business for only having to look after four particular products. Now, of course, you've got to think about advertising. You've got to think about importing product sourcing. It's not necessarily easy, but I think marketplaces are giving especially small business an enormous opportunity to actually build a business from scratch into a meaningful size. So, you know, that's really been sort of the Amazon play, you know, historically, and it still works very well. But what you see now is brand owners and manufacturers starting to diversify, right? So they're going, right, I've got a great running, I've got an Amazon store that runs really well in the US. I'm really happy with the sales. How do I grow further? You know, of course I continue to optimize on Amazon, but what do I do next, right? So if you're in the US, because the answer to this question is a bit different based on your starting position. But if you're in the US, very logically, the next place you'd go to is you go to Amazon Canada or an Amazon Mexico, because it's kind of the same platform, right? Just different geography. So, you know, there's a bit of logistical challenge that comes into play there. Beyond that, you know, you're probably thinking about Walmart. So Walmart had just opened to, opens its doors to make it much more easier for sellers to come on board. And it's one of the fastest growing platforms. So, you know, you think about listing your products on Walmart and doing that. Etsy is a really popular option with US sellers now, particularly during COVID. You know, and then, you know, you're probably thinking about, okay, where do I go internationally, right? So if I think about internationally, Amazon is a good option because I'm already familiar with the platform. Typically, sellers used to go to the UK. So, you know, I've got an Amazon store in the US. I'm now going to do an Amazon store in the UK. They're still doing that, but because of Brexit and the challenges and the complexities that has driven that, a lot of them are now going, you know, starting, say, with Amazon Germany, which is the second largest Amazon market in Europe, and then using Germany as a base to get into France, Italy, Spain, Netherlands, Sweden, and Poland. So, you know, that's what that sort of expansion looks like. Beyond that, you know, we're starting to see some sellers now that are starting to look at Amazon Japan, which is actually one of the largest Amazon markets, often forgotten. And, you know, and there's other emerging Amazon markets that are popping up as well. So on that list, I've put Amazon India, Amazon Brazil. Amazon is in a couple of countries in the Middle East as well. You know, and they're really starting to form great additional revenue streams for businesses. So, you know, as you can see, I'm sort of painting this picture of, you know, you've started with one channel and you're starting to branch out. You know, you're starting to become more sophisticated, you know, and manage. You know, we're seeing a lot of sellers now look, you know, quite easily, you know, running between 10 and 15 different channels, still selling the same products, you know, because there's efficiencies in sourcing and product development and the like. But then the ability to put that same product in front of more of, larger audiences really helps you to drive your sales. So, that's a really interesting dynamic. And, you know, before I'll be talking for a while, so I'll hand it back to you in a sec. But the other thing I would say is, you know, this is where we play as Merchant Spring, is when you expand to different countries, different platforms, you know, different systems, as you rightly put, you know, things are not always the same, right? Yeah. So expanding from, say, even basic things from an Amazon to a Walmart, all of a sudden you have to work within the Walmart system. You know, Walmart has a different way to Amazon to how do you list and optimize your products? Yeah. You know, how do you manage the buy box? How do you manage your seller health? How do you track your sales? All of those things you have to start to familiarize yourself with. So there is a bit of a challenge sometimes for sellers where the complexity starts to increase disproportionately with the number of marketplaces that you go on, right? Because all of a sudden you're trying to tie everything together, trying to get everything consistent, and that's a lot of work and a lot of heartache. So, you know, this is a space that we play in as Merchant Spring. You know, we allow you to connect all of those channels into a single management tool, you know, so that you've got everything at your fingertips in an homogenized way, and you sort of save on all that admin time and really can really focus on driving your sales. So, yeah, it's a big world out there, lots of options in terms of marketplaces and growth.
Yeah, so very interesting commentary there. And I am going to have a lot of questions, obviously, but we can attack them one at a time, I guess. So when you said Walmart is much easier, so I would like to understand why Walmart is typically much easier. Is it just the platform that they are providing to the sellers that is slightly easier to use, or overall the kind of, you know, business model that they are able to provide makes it easier for the seller? Can you touch a little bit on that? Why Walmart is easier?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Okay. Or it's a little bit of everything, I would say. So I wouldn't say that, you know, all of us, if you're used to Amazon, all of a sudden Walmart is so much easier, you know, in terms of doing business with. But it's a little bit on every dimension. So the first most compelling one is around the level of competition. So as you know, Walmart, in terms of traffic, is one of the biggest e-commerce businesses in the US, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's not as big as Amazon.
Yeah.
But if you think about the number of people selling on Walmart right now, so it's probably getting close to about 200,000 sellers. You know, Amazon has got 6 million sellers.
Yeah.
So, you know, just think about like the ratio of, you know, how many consumers visit the website versus how many sellers trying to sell things. You know, just sort of basic supply and demand equation. That actually says, you know, as a seller on Walmart, you've got a better chance of selling your product than you do on Amazon. Now, don't get me wrong, right? On Amazon, the top sellers make way more than the top sellers on Walmart, but the average seller on Walmart probably makes more than the average seller on Amazon, just because the level of competition is less, and particularly as you're starting out, you know, it's easier to get going on Walmart than it is on Amazon. That's the first point I would make. The second point is, you know, their interface and the like, they're pretty user friendly. So it's, I would rate them as marginally better than Amazon.
Yep.
But also what we're finding is with these, let's call them challenger marketplaces. So the marketplaces that are actively out there trying to recruit sellers, trying to build themselves up, they do have a much more collaborative approach with a lot of their sellers, right? So Amazon essentially is built around a self-service model.
Yeah.
So, you know, very hard to get hold of an account manager, certainly in the US. It's different in other geographies, but in the US, very hard to get hold of an account manager. If you've got issues with your account, you need support. The whole system, you know, and you don't blame them because dealing with so many sellers, is based on self-service. Whereas some of these challenger marketplaces, you know, clearly they're deliberately investing in providing better service. So this is an area where they can differentiate. So you'll find that you'll get more support and help when you run into issues and those things. And you're not sort of, you know, forever dealing with some sort of help desk system that never seems to give you an answer. So I'd say those are probably the two or three main differentiators in terms of, you know, it being easier. But the main one for me, the main compelling reason is the lack of competitiveness with other sellers vis-a-vis Amazon.
Okay, interesting. So obviously, I am going to have some more questions there. But before we do that, I want to address one more comment that you mentioned, and that is going to be using Germany as a base to penetrate some of the European countries. And each of these silos, when we look at different geographies, they can have their own marketplaces. The tiny, mini marketplaces, they are going to be culturally aligned. They are going to have their own nuances. So why is Germany being used as the base to penetrate, let's say, in France? Is there a specific reason for that?
Yeah, there is. So before Brexit, the way this used to work was people would list their products on Amazon in the UK because it's an English-speaking environment. It's just easier, particularly if you're coming from North America. You put all your products in an Amazon warehouse in the UK, and you'd be able to do what they call pan-European fulfillment. So you could list your products on, say, Amazon France or Germany, but you don't have to put all your stock into those countries. You can just ship from the UK, right? It's sort of one warehouse solution, keep things simple.
Yeah.
That all came to an end following Brexit, where if you have stock in a UK warehouse, that's really only, Amazon will really only ship that to UK addresses. They will not ship products into the mainland and vice versa. So if you want to expand into Europe as an Amazon seller, you need to have a presence, physical stock presence on the mainland.
Yeah.
Which then, you know, gets you into the question, you know, what's the best country to start with there? Typically, people pick Germany because it's one of the largest it's the largest Amazon market on the mainland, you know, also from an inventory capacity point of view. So that's usually the easiest starting place. And that's where people start. So they put all their products in Amazon Germany, and then they will set up Amazon France, Italy, Spain, and the like, and fulfill products from there. Now that's changing a little bit because places like Amazon in the Netherlands have just opened up a warehouse solution as well in terms of FBA. So that makes it a bit easier as well, certainly from a language point of view. And, you know, the other thing that a lot of sellers will do in Europe is use another service that Amazon provide, which is the Amazon omni-channel fulfillment or multi-channel fulfillment. Sorry, let me use the correct terminology. So these are the abilities to say, you know, you may be selling on a local marketplace like a Cdiscount in France, you know, one of the larger domestic marketplaces or say on bol.com in the Netherlands. You can sell on those marketplaces, but still ship your products from an Amazon warehouse. So again, it's a great mechanism to keep all your stock in one place and keep things simple that way.
Okay, so from the market perspective, let's say if you look at Germany, obviously that is going to be the second largest market, and that's probably the reason why people are opting for Germany. But are there any barriers from the language perspective? If somebody is, let's say they don't really speak German, then are there going to be any problems in penetrating in that market? Are there any other countries that are going to be slightly more English friendly after UK in Europe?
Yeah, look, I would say, unfortunately, most countries in mainland Europe, in terms of selling products, you do need to translate your pages into a local language, right?
Yeah.
But you know that is not rocket science. There's lots of firms who specialize in translating product pages, specifically based around Amazon. And they'll do the local optimization for you at a relatively good cost. So there's a good service provider network out there that you can easily tap into. In terms of customer service, certainly from Amazon, that's really easy because if you're using FBA, Amazon will do that for you. So you don't have to worry about, oh, how do I answer queries in German or French and the like. And in terms of managing the platform itself, you know, everything translates back into English. So you can set your language settings. So, you know, even though you're operating your store in Germany, the interface that you use as a seller, you know, is pretty much identical to what you're using in North America, simply because, you know, they have translation options in there. So you can look at things, you know, in your native language. So that makes it a lot easier and accessible. The main thing I would say is just that translation thing. And of course, probably related to that is if you are doing advertising and the like, you know, executing your advertising campaigns in local language and also doing like a keyword research and a keyword bidding against, you know, obviously local terms. Again, partnering up with a local agency in the region will certainly help. And you know, just in case if your listeners are wondering, if they're looking for recommendations, you know, we have lots of European agencies that use our platform. And we've got, you know, great relationships with a whole number of agencies. So certainly if your users are interested in a recommendation in terms of, you know, agencies they should have a chat with, when it comes to expanding to Europe, I'm very happy to provide, you know, recommendations on that front.
Yeah. Amazing. Love it. So let's talk about some other things from the business interaction perspective, especially while considering the language aspect. So obviously, in this case, Amazon is probably providing the customer service. They are providing the warehouse, the inventory, just because they are doing that's provided as part of the FBA. But are there going to be any other requirements that the sellers need to, let's say, deal with local authorities? I don't know if they are going to require the local bank account. Are there going to be any other moving parts that would require interaction in German?
Yeah. In terms of Europe, you do need to register for a VAT number for tax purposes. You know, and I'm, you know, I'll admit I'm not a complete expert on VAT compliance, but that's certainly required. There's some great businesses who specialize in this, like, you know, Vet Global, you know, Elotex and a couple of others. They can certainly provide great services in terms of making sure you're VAT registered and making sure you meet all the other business requirements that Amazon and local authorities need. The good thing, obviously, in Europe is you kind of only have to do this once in a particular country, and then you know you can use that same registration across the rest of Europe. So, for example, you can register for VAT in Germany, then you can you know use that in France and other places as well. So there's no duplication there as well. The other thing that's worth thinking about is sort of product and category restrictions. So if you're selling products with higher compliance requirements, so, you know, for example, anything that people can eat or like skincare products, things that you apply to your to your face or your body, or things, you know, batteries or electrical products and the like. You know, there are safety and regulatory standards that apply. Now, most of the time, they'll be common across the European Union. So again, you don't have to think about that once, but it's worth just researching that upfront to say what do governments require, and also, you know, have a look at Amazon's restricted products and categories list. They will give you detailed guidance in terms of for what type of category, you know, what sort of certification or testing evidence or you know, other documentation, you know, will they ask you for in order to allow you to sell in a certain category, just to make sure that you're meeting the minimum product compliance standards. That's another piece that it's worth just looking at, because Amazon may require a different set of documentation in North America for a particular product than they do for the same product in Europe, just because they're adhering to local requirements, obviously.
Interesting. So the VAT requirement that you mentioned, VAT, do you require to set up an entity in each of those countries, or do you still need to pay VAT when you are going to be foreign incorporated? So let's say if I have the e-commerce merchant from US and they are trying to to one of the European countries, do they need to incorporate everywhere, or are they operating just as an US firm and they simply need to comply with VAT?
Yeah, sure. Look, I can't answer this question for every single European country, but certainly from a UK point of view, you need to register for VAT, which means you can do that with, you know, Her Majesty's, you know, Revenue and Customs Service. They typically require you to be incorporated in the UK and also have a domiciled bank account as well. So just to give you a bit of a steer in terms of how that works. I suspect other European countries would be quite similar, because they all sort of, you know, fell under the same framework. But again, I'd happy to recommend you to sort of, you know, experts who can sort of go through the nitty-gritty on this as well. You know, one of the big questions that comes up right now a lot is the time it takes to register for VAT. Because of Brexit and because of the pandemic, and there have been lots of sellers now moving online, there are big backlogs in terms of getting your VAT registration done. So, you know, some countries, you know, certainly in the UK, numbers are being quoted, you know, anywhere between 6 to 12 weeks. Whereas, you know, there's some other countries like Luxembourg, for example, apparently that's the place to go to now, because they can get it done in 2 weeks. So, you know, knowing the lay of the land literally at a local level will help you as well, because you can try and speed things up by you know, registering in certain places versus others too.
Okay, amazing. Do you have any perspective on Etsy or Alibaba? Are they similar in terms of business model, you know, comparing to Walmart, Amazon, or are they slightly different overall from the fulfillment perspective, from the business model perspective, and the options that they provide to sellers?
Yeah, look, Alibaba, I would say from the outset, isn't used that much yet by Western sellers. So most of the sellers are based in China, you know, selling out into Western markets, so to speak. But I do know they are investing heavily in their platform to bring on international sellers and actually turn them into a truly kind of global platform in terms of both sellers and buyers being everywhere. So that it's probably too early days. We don't have many customers on that platform yet. In terms of Etsy has been really interesting in that 2-3 years ago, when you'd say, you know, what's the typical Etsy seller look like? They were very much a sort of more of an art and craft person, you know, selling some unique items. It's almost, I'm sure I'm going to offend any Etsy seller that listens to this podcast, but they're more like hobbyists, right? And please take that the right way as opposed to the wrong way. I'm not at all saying they're not serious about the product they sell. They're very passionate, but it's you know, tend to be more on the smaller side. I feel like Etsy is becoming more mainstream now, where I see more of the mainstream sellers migrating onto that channel. So even on, you know, I saw a stat earlier this week, which has, you know, about somewhere between around 25 to 30% in that ballpark of Amazon sellers are considering selling on Etsy this year. So, you know, and Amazon sellers are the professional guys, right? So they're starting to look at Etsy as an additional channel, you know, reach a new audience, and Etsy's seen phenomenal growth. So Etsy is very close to Amazon in terms of the number of sellers that are using this platform, you know, close to 6 million as well. So they're probably one of the fastest growing marketplaces out there this year. Now, the profile will be different. There'll still be a lot of very small sellers, but you know, my point is mainstream sellers are really starting to see that as a serious option. The good thing about Etsy, it's a global platform, right? Yeah. So you don't have this sort of, you know, local country thing that you have to deal with and local fulfillment options and all of that. As a US-based seller, you can just open up a US-based Etsy account and you can sell anywhere in the world. So the barriers there are actually quite low. And, you know, the Etsy buyer is a bit different to say, an Amazon Prime customer in the sense that they're typically looking for something that's unique, a bit harder to get. So, you know, they're much more focused on getting the right product as opposed to the convenience. So they tend to be quite happy to wait for it as opposed to, you know, if you're buying boxes of cereal from Amazon, you do expect it to be in your doorstep tomorrow morning, because it's sort of, you know, using it for everyday life purchases as opposed to something that's maybe a bit more unique, rare, or, you know, for a special occasion.
Interesting. So when we look at this overall global market, obviously Amazon is extremely big in North America. And I don't know if that is, I would assume that that's probably big in Canada and Mexico as well. When I say North America, definitely US Amazon is big. So when we look at this whole global market, is Amazon still the biggest in every market? Every major market, when we look at, let's say, the global map, for example, UK, Germany, France, Australia, yeah, New Zealand, China, Japan, if we look at the overall landscape, is Amazon still big? Or in some markets, the other marketplaces are slightly bigger?
Yeah, look, let me, and the answer varies dramatically by geography. So let me take you on a bit of a geographical like whirlwind tour. When it comes to Europe, Amazon is by far the largest marketplace across most Western European countries. So eBay is a strong competitor. So eBay is very strong in the UK relative to Amazon, but Amazon's bigger. Other European countries, they're smaller by comparison. So they tend to be like a number two, number three, or number four. So Amazon, very strong in Europe. On Eastern Europe, by the way, you've got a very big marketplace called Allegro that really has a very strong position in Eastern Europe. And, yeah, and I think, you know, it's really interesting to see Amazon expanding to Poland a couple of months ago. You know, clearly Eastern Europe is on Amazon's mind in terms of gaining share from other marketplaces and growing their business. But Europe, I would say, I put squarely into Amazon's camp. Obviously, the same with North America. Then you get to, obviously, China. So, you know, China is a completely different ballgame. Amazon actually withdrew out of China a couple of years ago. They said, too hard, too difficult, give up, right? Clearly, you've got your big incumbent players, obviously, your biggest one being Alibaba. I think they've got another name now. It escapes me. But obviously, you've got the Tmall, Taobao, you've got JD, you've got VIP.com, all local Chinese incumbents. And actually, in terms of size and GMV, these guys are even bigger than Amazon. Certainly, Alibaba is, and it's a pretty well-known fact. So where it gets really interesting is around Asia and Australasia. So you've got Japan, which is, it's like a different, very mature market, actually. And Amazon has been there for a long time and has a very strong position. And the number two competitor there is the local marketplace called Rakuten, who's expanding to other markets as well. Pretty much, you know, a number one and number two type scenario there. But Amazon Japan, very established. Amazon's definitely number one. You get to Australia, Amazon was a late entrant. So Australia is one of the only markets whereby eBay is still by far the largest market, right? Mm. So eBay's still about 2 to 3 times the size of Amazon. Amazon is catching up fast, and you know that's going to change, I think, in the next few years. And there's a bunch of local players there as well that are very strong. Southeast Asia is really interesting, right? So Amazon has not really got a foothold there, but you know it's interesting because it's the most densely, it's some of the most densely populated places like Indonesia. Rapid population growth, you know, obviously emerging middle class, very much underserved, And actually, Amazon's got no presence, right? So they open up Amazon Singapore as a bit of a beachhead. It's tiny. It's not setting the world on fire. Yeah. There's really two big players there alongside local marketplaces that that are actually doing very well. And they are Lazada, which is a business that is probably close to 15 years old, maybe a bit older. And that was actually set up as a copycat business to Amazon. So, you know, if you're a Lazada seller and you're used to the Amazon system, it's kind of like everything looks and feels like Amazon, you know, the seller backend, how fulfillment works, the whole lot. So Lazada covers Malaysia, Singapore, you know, Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia, and one more, I think, escapes me now. And then you've got their big competitor called Shopee with double E's at the end. They're essentially the number one and number two, depending on the market. Sometimes Shopee's number one, or Lazada's number two, and it flips around. That market there is still, you know, I think we're going to see a bit of a sort of a proxy battle between Amazon and Alibaba in that market. You know, Alibaba has taken a big stake in Lazada. I think Tencent has taken a big stake in Shopee. So, you know, there's a bit of a play of who's going to win that battle, which is, I think is going to be great for sellers because there's more and more options and innovations and opportunities being driven into that market right now. And then you've got other places like South America. So Amazon has got a pretty good presence, obviously, in Mexico and in Brazil. But Mercado Libre is by far the Amazon of South America, right? Very strong position. If you really want to sell products into South America, you know, Mercado Libre is really your go-to place. And then, yeah, look, I'm literally you know, imagining this map in my mind. I'm like, what part of the world have I not covered yet? There's of course the there's India. India is a fascinating country in itself, obviously, A, because of the size, but you've got immense competition there amongst marketplaces, yeah. Right? So, you know, Amazon has now, after a couple of false starts, has built a really strong position. They're definitely the number one in India now, but you've got others like, you know, Flipkart and a bunch of others that are, you know, really provide really strong competition. And it's not uncommon for Indian sellers to be across five or six different marketplaces in India there as well. Yeah. So lots of choice. And then, you know, last but not least, the Middle East is another place where Amazon is making really strong inroads. So they, you know, quite unusual. They acquired Souq.com, which was a local marketplace player a couple of years ago. And then now they've rebranded it to Amazon and they're expanding their operations. You know, they're in the UAE, they're in Saudi Arabia, you know, and they're really building out that business and really a growth market as well. So yeah, another area where Amazon, I think, will dominate as well. The other one then is really Africa, and I don't really have that much insight. I know there's a couple of local marketplaces and some African specific marketplaces there. Amazon really doesn't have a presence there, and neither has eBay or any of the others. So it's largely driven by local e-commerce players.
That's amazing. I guess that's it for today, Paul. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts?
You know, I would say to sellers is we're in a very exciting time from a seller point of view because we've got more and more customers shopping online, but also we've got more and more people launching marketplaces. So if you're a seller, it just creates, you know, I think we've seen more opportunities open for sellers in the last 2 years than we've had for a long time. And I think this trend will only continue. So, you know, being on marketplaces is silly. I mean, I'm completely biased, but I find it pretty exciting. But, you know, if you're not on there yet, it's worth establishing a presence and starting to build up that rating, that history and all of that. Like, you know, think of it as you are building an asset on these marketplaces that will provide benefits for years to come. So, yeah, it's an exciting space, but let me finish there. Otherwise, I'll just keep talking and it'll be a long Friday or Thursday for both of us.
All right, Paul. And my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be, for listeners, so if you are not on marketplace, number one, you need to get onto those. And as Paul correctly pointed out, that your reviews and ratings are going to be really assets. But once you get on there, then this is another world out there. As you can see, there are just too many marketplaces, too many opportunities. So first, get on there and then try how you can expand internationally. On that note, Paul, I really want to thank you for your time. This has been a very insightful episode.
Thank you. I appreciate your time too. And thank you for having me on.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Paul, head over to merchantspring.io. It's merchantspring.io. They are offering a free trial of their platform. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Francois Jeffrey from Novilent, who discusses what manufacturers need to know about working with international suppliers. Also, the interview with Laurie McDonald, who discusses sales compensation best practices for organizations aiming to transition to e-commerce from the traditional sales model. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.